This is Pure Decking, show number 414 for Thursday, October or something. I don't know. Yeah. October 29th, year of our Lord, 2020. I don't know why the computer says year of our Lord, but there it is. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and telling pollsters that you just voted for the guy with the boot on his head. I'm Morps. Tonight, we have Are You?
Viva Vermin was supreme.
Oh, it is time for him to run for president again.
Yeah.
We have Madman. Oh, did he not run this time?
He's ran
every time for like years.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, but he's only really on the ballot in New York.
Well, I mean, you know, absentee ballot for anywhere, right?
I mean, you can always do a write-in. He did announce. Well, okay, he usually announces.
No, he's running, man. Vermin Supreme President. Here is the homepage. Go donate.
Look at Vermin his policies. Supreme 2021. Wait a minute.
It wouldn't surprise me, man.
That'd be the best joke, right? Run for president in a non-election year. Of course, they all start immediately after the last election, so...
Oh, this one won't stop, man. Usually it's a 2-year break, and then we're back at it, but this is just not going to stop this time. Ugh.
No, it's not. Unfortunately.
Well, you're wrong. It gives me something to watch, but Jesus, man, I'd like a week off every now and then. I enjoy watching the next riot just like every other man, but God damn. I mean, this is their punishment for taking away fucking live PD and cops. Now I just have it 24 hours a day. It's like my own streaming guerrilla channel for Trump. And I just realized that was possibly a racist joke, but I didn't mean it that way.
I still want to see.
I want to see that channel.
Gorilla fight a grizzly bear.
I mean, they were joking. They were making shit up, saying, "Oh, Trump requires a special TV channel of just gorilla fights 24/7 in case he wants to watch it." It's like, fuck, I'd watch that. That'd be awesome.
I phoned up my cable provider. I wanted that package.
It's like we don't have enough gorillas. We'll get two idiots, put them in gorilla costumes, and tell them
exactly.
To go at it. I mean. You know, make it interesting. Give one a sword. I mean,
you know, WWE gorilla. It doesn't have to be real. I just want the illusion of real.
You know, as long as the gorilla costumes aren't like really bad. I mean,
oh no, we've got the motion capture down, dude. We'll do a Planet of the Apes, just virtual gorilla channel.
Her rats says weird thought. What kind of fucked up porn do you think Trump watches?
Oh. Okay, it's not going to be anything scat or urine because he's kind of a germaphobe. I think he's into bondage cuckoldry.
Okay.
Yep. I have nothing. I'm not even speculating on that. Sorry.
It's the husband is tied up, and every porn is him superimposed on whatever the porn star is, banging a hot chick.
Well, I mean, what do you think all the deepfake technology is for?
So we're going to attribute the deepfake technology to Trump now and his demand for altered pornography.
Just him banging every chick. Oh, that'd be great.
I'm glad that question came from outside my normal circles because I would have to leave this.
Well, I mean, they need to go get the guy. They need to go get whoever's doing the deepfake for Matt Stone, Trey Parker's thing that we watched yesterday where they were putting Trump's face on like half of their cast.
Oh, was that a South Park thing, was it?
Yeah, that was the South Park guys. That thing that
I didn't realize.
Showed us.
Huh, I did not realize.
Well, I mean, I don't know how you could. They deepfaked everyone in it.
Except for Tom Cruise, man. That was Tom Cruise. Well,
that was I don't care what anyone says. Cruise.
Yeah.
Saying vagina poop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Vagina poop.
That was absolutely
proving I'm a deep fake.
So. Man, that I, you know, in 10 years, that's going to be some underground dark. It's probably already is. Never mind. There's probably a pay-for service where you can go grab any porn video and have the faces swapped by somebody who knows how to use the deep fake stuff. And just like, yeah, I want me banging and then, you know, whatever movie star. And they just...
Oh, no, that's not what it's being used for.
Blackmail?
No. Every Mickey Mouse Club chick star is in a deep fake somewhere. Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, all of them. There's going to be a Mickey Mouse Club reunion porno.
Well, I mean, I'm sure somebody out there will fund it, so...
Yeah, I have nothing.
So, do we want to get on to the stories now, or do we want
Yes!
To...
And this whole tangent was brought to you by Haratz. Audience participation is not really suggested when it comes to this type of aside, but appreciated nonetheless.
So, if you're wanting to know how to get into the IRC, just go to galaxy15radio.com. We start up approximately 9 central on Thursdays. In the RC tonight, myself, Sardonyx, The Bot, CyberLard, Cykros, DPView, Haratz, Madman, and The Coffee Maker. Yeah, hop in there when we're doing the show, and if I happen to look at the right time to see your IRC comment, it's not that busy in there, so there's a good chance I'll see it. You know, you too can... troll the show and try to get
no
us off
super
on
chat
segments.
No super chats here, man. Everything's free.
Oh, cutting down on the Coke. No, switching the type of Coke. I'm going for weight loss now. I would try meth. It's cheaper, but I want to keep my teeth.
I hear dental work's not that expensive.
$10,000, man.
Damn.
If you want the upper done, it's $10,000 and it's $15,000 for the lower.
That's... Are you talking implants or
whatever the TV people get? I know it's $10,000 for the upper and $15,000 for the lower.
Those have to be the full implants.
I know a person who was going for a significant job in a television studio, and they were told to get their uppers done. That'll get them passed for the next 6 months, and then they'll have to spend $15,000 if they're really serious on the lowers if they want to stay on the network. It's one of the ways you show commitment.
Yeah, it's by getting those perfect teeth done.
Yeah, you know, you're committing yourself to the show.
Okay, good thing in the U.S. the range is a lot less. 3,000 to 5,000.
Okay. I might get it done in the U.S. then if I ever get it done.
Back in the day, I thought I remembered seeing a news story about somebody deciding that all dental work was fraud and figured out how to make his own dentures. Apparently whittled his own teeth down and then used a combination of plastics and floor wax to make his own teeth. I need to find that.
Yeah, I'm going to get someone who's gone to dental school. Because as someone who's performed my own dentistry, no. No.
Wait a minute. You've performed your own dentistry. Did it involve channel locks?
No, just a small rasping file, nail file sort of thing. Just knock the sharp edges off where a tooth got shattered.
Oh, still having to file your own teeth down. My God. I bet that felt wonderful.
It's not as bad as cutting my testicles open. That was probably the worst.
We're on air and recording. Do you really want to admit to some of these things?
I did my own surgery. It's better than going to the doctor. I fucking hate those people. They scare the shit out of me.
Yeah, you go to the doctor, you might get COVID. My God. A little bit of woo-flu.
Oh, man, everybody should know how to stitch himself and do some minor stuff, but it's just doing it reverse. That's the scary part, man, when you have to use a mirror.
Yeah, I could see that being a problem.
I've made some mistakes.
I've not had to stitch myself, but I've done the super glue thing a couple of times where, you know, cut the fuck out of your arm and then, you know, super glue it shut so you can get to a doctor. Yeah, I've done that.
Look, pro tip to anyone who's going to stitch themselves, don't cheap out and try and bend your own needle. Go buy one from a medical place. Like, yeah, just take it from someone who's made the mistake. Sewing needles aren't meant to be used for stitching yourself.
Apparently nowadays, most doctors don't bother with stitches. They do medical adhesive these days.
Yeah. So. Yeah, some good binding tapes out there, like meshes.
Yeah.
That don't leave scars and stuff. But then again, it still means you have to go to a doctor, and even though it's free here, I'd still rather not.
Actually, super glue is medical rated.
Yeah.
Well, what it was invented for.
Yeah, the Vietnam War.
Yep. Yeah, Rats is saying, how much does an Army first aid manual cost? Because apparently he knows somebody that went bankrupt from having to get stitches done from a dog bite. I imagine they probably gave him some really expensive antibiotics from a dog bite.
That's what the price would have been, the antibiotics and the cleaning of it. Yeah.
Well, they probably had to give him a rabies shot, too, if he, you know, went in for a dog bite.
I had a bad one on my left leg, pretty bad, that was caused by a rusty nail.
Yeah.
And there's no way I was scrubbing that out myself without anesthetic. Like, I had to go and get that one stitched professionally because they were pretty much took a toothbrush to the open wound to get the rust out.
And then anyway, the tetanus shot.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Just a little pro tip. If you don't remember the last time you got a tetanus shot and you cut yourself, get a tetanus shot.
Yeah, go ahead and get it done.
The doctor didn't even give me a choice. That took too long to answer.
Yeah. If you can't remember when you last had one, then just get one done anyway.
Not the last time I went to the doctor, but the time before that, they said, so when was the last time you had a tetanus shot? I'm like, I'm not sure. Okay, you're getting a tetanus shot.
Getting one. Okay. Yep.
Time for a booster.
So, I got one about a year ago.
Look at the debilitating problem that tetanus gives you. Yeah. You'll always want one.
Yeah, I don't see a problem with that. Actually, hell, this year, I normally don't even get the flu shot. This year, I went ahead and got that. It's like, well, you know, might be a good idea this time around for some reason. So.
I mean, once I get over 50, if I make it over 50, I'll probably seriously consider it, but not now.
Well, it's more I was thinking the panic over anybody with the sniffles these days. I just didn't want to deal with it.
Oh, just keeps people away from you. That's what I enjoy.
I use that to get more room in a grocery store.
Yeah.
Walking down an aisle, I'll randomly sneeze.
Oh, that's so. I took some red ink and one of those paper surgical masks because you have to wear your mask anywhere you go, and splattered that with, you know, just dipped a little bit of paintbrush in the red ink, just a little bit, and, you know, knocked the end of it near the mask. People leave me alone.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why my smoker's cough is really coming in handy now. Took 20 years to develop, but we've got it down to where people stay the fuck away from me in public.
Yeah, you know, that or just go around mumbling, pretending you're Alex Jones. That's a good way to get people to leave you alone, too.
Interdimensional pedophiles.
Frogs, gay. You know, just somebody sees you doing that. You know, the children. You know, the kid might ask their mom, what's wrong with you? The mom just says, leave him alone.
The weird dude that nobody else wants to go near comes around, gives you a high five. Fuck yeah, buddy. Frogs.
Demons.
Yeah, you just dog. You give him the high five, you'll fuck yeah, go in the next aisle. Who the fuck was that guy? So anyways, let's get on with it here. So first article I have is from the Hollywood Reporter. Amazon argues users do not actually own purchased Prime Video content.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it says buy, and it doesn't give me that whole, this is you're buying a license. It has to be buying a movie. I'm going to want to double check this while I'm saying it.
When an Amazon Prime user buys content on the platform, what they're really paying for is a limited license for, quote, on-demand viewing over an indefinite period of time, unquote. And that they're warned of that in the company's terms of use. You know, the little box that nobody ever reads that says they can sew you into a Cent iPad. That's the company's argument for why a lawsuit over hypothetical future deletions of content should be dismissed. Amanda Cadell, in April, sued Amazon for unfair competition and false advertising. She claims the company, quote, secretly reserves the right, unquote, to end consumers' access to content purchased through its Prime Video service. She filed her punitive class action on behalf of herself and any California residents who've purchased video content from the service from April 25th, 2016 to the present. So that's going to be just about damn near everybody in California. On Monday, Amazon filed a motion to dismiss her complaint, arguing that she lacks standing to sue because she hasn't been injured, and noting she's purchased 13 titles on Prime since filing her complaint, so she's still using the service. Quote, plaintiff claims the defendant Amazon Prime's video service, which allows consumers to purchase video content for streaming or download, misleads consumers because sometimes the video content might later become unavailable if a third party's rights holder revokes or modifies Amazon's license, writes attorney David Bitterman in the motion, which is posted below. The quote, the complaint points vaguely to online commentary about the alleged potential harm, but it does not identify any Prime Video purchase unavailable to plaintiff herself. In fact, all of the Prime Video content that the plaintiff has ever purchased remains available, unquote. Further, Amazon argues the site's required user agreements explain that some content may later become unavailable. In the most relevant agreement here, the Prime Video Terms of Use is presented to consumers every time they buy content on Amazon Prime Video. That's a lie. These Terms of Use expressly state that purchasers obtain only a limited license to view content and that purchased content may become unavailable due to provider license restriction or other reasons. Okay, the reason I say that's a lie, I have a Fire Stick downstairs, and I've rented movies on it, and I've purchased movies on it, and it does not bring up a user license agreement every time you do it. So now I'm certain there's a link of somewhere in there if you dig available to view the terms, but it does not present those terms every time you rent something. So that's deception right there.
Yeah.
Amazon argues it doesn't matter whether Cadell actually bothered to read the fine print. Quote, an individual does not need to read an agreement in order to be bound by it, unquote, writes Biderman. Quote, a merchant terms of service agreement and an online consumer transaction is valid and enforceable when the consumer had reasonable notice of the terms of service, unquote. So, yeah, and the lawsuit is attached in the news story. But, yeah, Amazon's basically saying, yeah, you don't own your shit. We own your shit. You have a license to use it.
I don't know about the Fire Stick, but when you go to buy movies on Amazon Prime, just like on a PC, It doesn't say it when you click the buy button, but below it, there's a link. By ordering or viewing, you agree to terms, and terms are in blue, and you have to click the blue terms, not click the buy movie, to actually see what you're agreeing to.
Okay, there's so, probably a similar link on the Fire TV that I just haven't noticed.
Yeah, when you click the buy, it doesn't tell you anything. You have to click a button below the whole buy or rent button. And it's not even a button. It's just like the blue terms.
Yeah, so they're not even doing like some things do and making you click the box that you agree to it before you hit next.
Yeah. You don't even see it unless you are looking for it and click on it. If you just click buy a movie, you don't see shit.
And they have dismissed these so-called click wrap or shrink wrap software agreements if the user doesn't have to see it before they continue. So this might actually, I mean, we'll see who the judge sides with on this, but I have heard of these click wrap and shrink wrap user license agreements getting dismissed because they weren't prominent enough for people to see them.
There is one argument in Amazon's brief that I do agree with. I don't believe she has standing yet. She has not been harmed yet. Until they deny her access to a movie she's bought, she should not be able to bring the suit.
Good point.
Fair enough.
She hasn't actually lost anything yet. So she's suing them on a hypothetical that could possibly never happen. She'll get awarded $10 million and never have ever lost access to any of the videos. So no, until she's actually harmed, she shouldn't be able to bring the suit. But I do think the suit should be brought if you lose access to shit.
Well, Amazon has done this before. It wasn't on the video platform that I know of. It was on the ebook platform where they have gone in and removed ebooks that people have purchased. In fact, I think the book was 1984, now that I think about it. And they eventually gave people a couple of bucks of credit for it, but it was like, that was because, and that was after all the noise.
On something like that, nothing less than a full refund in cash should be acceptable.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think it's interesting. I'd be curious to see how it goes out. And I hadn't thought about the standing question until you just now mentioned that, because I like the requirement of standing generally from a lawsuit because it prevents meddling, like trying to do development like out in California these days is. Apparently a massive pain in the ass because any group can go out there and claim that they're going to be harmed by your building and, delay you or you'd have to take them to court or whatever. So apparently it's really hard to do. It's one of the reasons their housing prices are so ridiculous is it's apparently damn near impossible to put up new construction, at least in several of the California cities. So... yeah, the whole standing thing, proving that you have standing is kind of a good idea. But at the same time, I don't like the idea that, we might pay attention, but a lot of people don't. And that's not a conversation I'm looking forward to explaining to my mom is why she's bought something on Amazon and she wants to go rewatch it and it's not there anymore. Because they're not going to call Amazon, they're going to call me and say, why isn't this working?
You need to talk to Amazon. I don't work for them.
Yeah, but you see, it's got electricity and a keyboard attached to it, so I should know about it, according to most of my family, now that I think about it. So, but, that's how those conversations tend to go. And it'd be like, yeah, we have to look at your Amazon account, figure out what's up. And then,
At that point, she would have standing. She's losing something that she had purchased.
Yep, that's true. So... anyways, I don't have much else on that.
No, I'm good.
All right. Next one up.
Oh. One thing, I avoid that problem by you can still purchase DVDs on the ways to buy. I still buy DVDs. I'm a dinosaur that way.
I'm a fan of hard media, man.
Especially when that hard media is not attached to any particular... online requirement, like it doesn't have a license or anything attached to it. It is kind of nice just having a disc or an AVI file, MPEG file, whatever, just something clean and clear that you can do whatever you want. I tend to rip a lot of movies and things like that, and I've been going through my old backups. I was talking to you guys about that earlier. It's like, man, I got a lot of shit in these old discs, and half of the discs don't read anymore, so that's not half. I've had a handful of them not read, and it's like, oh, man, so luckily I don't think there was anything terribly important on there, but Rat says he got burned by iTunes as a kid and hasn't fucked with anything like iTunes or Amazon since. I've purchased stuff on iTunes, I've purchased stuff on Amazon. Whenever I do it, I always just assume it's a rental or it's a, I'll need to somehow get it out of the protected thing if I care about it. See, that's the question is, do I care enough about something to keep it? is, and if I do, then I will make sure I go get a copy of it, you know, one way or another. But if I'm just wanting to watch it and willing to pay the price for a movie to watch it, because the one thing I actually kind of like is renting on the Amazon Prime as opposed to buying it, because then you're just renting a movie.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, yeah, that works. Especially if it's not a movie you're certain you want to keep. So, but apparently they're trying to do that on the Disney streaming service where you're actually paying a monthly fee, you know, for access to the streaming service, and then they want you to pay on top of it for rentals. And I guess you're kind of doing the same thing with Amazon Prime, but I didn't start Amazon Prime for video. I started Prime because I was ordering enough stuff on Amazon that it made sense to save on the shipping.
Yeah.
So,
in Amazon Prime, a lot of the stuff that you're getting charged for is you're able to go to another service through Amazon.
Yeah, that too.
So it's not quite that they're charging me extra. I'm paying extra to just use one website for multiple streaming platforms.
Yeah, Apple's trying to do that with their thing now too.
But the whole Disney iPad letting me rent from my streaming service that I'm already paying to stream your shit. No, fuck you, Disney. Fuck you. Fuck you, Mickey Mouse.
Apparently, the last couple of their live action movies, they tried to do that because I remember seeing somebody. I think they were saying to boycott Mulan because they were trying to do that, where you're already paying for membership, but then they want you to pay more to watch like movies.
They did that with two of the ones that were supposed to be going to theater because they weren't putting them in theater. It was direct to stream, but you pay so much instead of going to a movie. Wait a month, it'll be on their normal streaming service for free.
I gotcha. So it's kind of an early access thing. Or wait 2 months.
Because it's they're getting around the whole no one's going to movie theaters this year. That's what that was. And I almost see their point, but I kind of think it's something different. It's not like they're doing rent the Aristocrats from our streaming service. It's rent this movie that came out in 2020 and should be in theaters, but we're not doing a theater release.
Rats is like, does Amazon ship your snacks too? It's like, well, kind of, but if you're, you know, going to be ordering your snacks to watch with the movie, you need to time it really well.
I ordered the snacks a week ago. Getting the movie now. The delivery dude should be here any moment.
Well, they in some areas, they have that whole, you know, same-day grocery thing, so I don't know.
Oh, is that from Amazon?
Amazon's got some areas
Kroger
that do it.
I know, like, Walmart does it.
I can't do it here, but I can do it at the office where they have stuff you can do within the 24-hour thing. And it's because the office is next to a Whole Foods, because they usually run them out of there. Were they charging $30 for the movie on the stream? I didn't see that. Rats is saying it was $30 on the streaming.
Fuck that.
That's crazy. I'm thinking a movie theater ticket would be fine.
Well, that might be what he's talking about.
I guess they might be thinking it's a household, not just a single person going in. Although there's only one person in my household normally. But yeah, $30 to stream Mulan's fucking crazy.
What was the cost for? It was $30. Fuck. Mulan costs $29.99 to purchase on your platform of choice. On top of your streaming plus. Yeah, so you're already paying for Disney Plus, then they wanted $30 more to watch the movie. But apparently it's a purchase. So, still.
That's a lot of money.
Especially for what apparently wasn't, I mean, I heard some reviews of it that it wasn't really all that good.
Not great a tale either. Anyway.
Oh, it wasn't even a tale of the original Mulan. They did a rewrite. They decided it shouldn't be a love story because that's not empowering for women. So the whole, I'm not spoiling anything on a however old animated movie, am I?
No. Nobody fucking cares. Go.
Nobody cares, man.
Yeah. Her drill sergeant and her fall in love in the original.
Yeah.
And it's an empowerment. I start out crap. I actually work through this and become awesome. I have to keep a secret that I'm a chick because I don't want to dishonor my family. And then in the original, she ends up falling in love with the training officer. And when they find out that she's a chick, eventually they just get married or whatever crap as a happy ending.
Yeah.
In the remake, they do away with the love story because you can't have a love story in a modern Disney movie because nobody gets married. That's heteronormative.
Oh, God.
And instead of her, it being a, I have to hide my gender to save the honor of my family, it's, we need to change the entire Chinese culture and chicks should be equal and awesome.
I'll bet that went over well in modern CCP China.
I just try and complain about it, Mops.
Oh, I see your point.
Yeah, exactly.
it pretty much killed the entire plot line of the original. So if you were going in wanting to watch a live action version of the original, which I'm not sure why anyone would want to,
Well, they're still
you
trying to get the
couldn't.
taste of the Will Smith genie out of their mouth, I guess.
Oh, yeah. That's a disgusting taste.
I mean, because I saw a few clips of that, and I was just like, "Nope, you got nothing." It's like I don't know why Will Smith would have taken that role, because that was not that was you know what I
The
saw of that, it was
zeros.
not good. I mean,
How many zeros are on the checks?
yeah, that's anything to get away from my kid. Just yeah, I'll do anything.
That might be the case. Anyways, you guys ready for the next article?
Yep,
Yeah, go
next
for it.
one up.
Next one up is from ZDNet. New Windows 10 update permanently removes Adobe Flash. Microsoft
Okay.
released a Windows update that removes Adobe's Flash Player before it reaches the end of support on December 31st, 2020. Update KB4577586 is part of Microsoft's effort to follow through with its plans. With plans it announced along with Adobe, Apple, Facebook, Google, and Mozilla in 2017 to end support for Flash by December of 2020. That's sad because when the iPhone first came out, there were some absolutely fantastic jokes where people were talking about photos with that, the Flash and without the Flash. And in some, it was just a black screen. Others, it was, they actually photoshopped the TV show Flash into the photos. There were some great memes about Flash not
Nice.
being supported on the iPhone when it first came out, but now I guess that applies to everybody. The Flash removing update is available for all supported of Windows 10, Windows Server, and Windows 8. In September, Microsoft confirmed it was ending support for Adobe Flash Player on its Chrome based Edge and legacy Edge browsers, as well as IE 11 by the end of 2020. But the company also detailed future enterprise support options for customers that need to retain Flash for business line applications. Edge will allow Adobe Flash Player to load as a plugin via the Internet Explorer mode feature. Inherently, Internet Explorer 11 will also allow this. Once you make the switch from Microsoft-provided Adobe Flash Player, it will be treated as any other third-party plugin and will not receive customer support from Microsoft, Microsoft said at the time. In the past, Microsoft has worked with Adobe to deliver Flash updates for the browser plugin in order to ensure users were protected from exploits and malware targeting the Flash Player's security flaws. This new update removes Flash Player from Windows devices and cannot be uninstalled, Microsoft says in a new support note. Okay, I'm not thrilled about that. Of course, most people
No.
don't try to remove most updates, so. However, it isn't rolling out via Windows Server Update Services yet, and the update needs to be downloaded and installed from the Microsoft Update Catalog. It'll become available to WSUS in early 2021, but admins can import it manually. Microsoft is releasing the Flash removing update ahead of the end of support so that enterprise customers can test the impact on business applications when Flash is removed from a Windows PC or server. The company said it will continue to deliver Flash security updates until support ends. We are releasing this removal update in advance of end of support to help customers test and validate their environments for any impact that might occur by the removal of Adobe Flash Player. Also, if there is another security update for Adobe Flash Player released, customers who take this removal update will be offered the security update. So, or will still be offered the security update. Microsoft also has detailed two methods that users and admins can follow to continue to use the Flash Player once the update is installed. Users can reset a device to an earlier system restore point. Okay, that's not really an restore from backup. That's an answer.
That's not a fix.
However, users need to explicitly enable this feature, and a system report restore point must have been created on the Windows device before the update was applied. You know, Windows, where the updates are automatic and you can't turn them off. The other option is to reinstall Windows without installing the update. Fuck!
Damn.
Format your machine because you need to use Flash and we fucked you over? Is that what they just said?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Formatting a machine is a pain in the ass thing to do.
So Rats wants to know why Flash was ever considered a good idea for business software. Because Java Embedded was terrible. You ever use Java Embedded? It was not good for a long time. It's gotten a lot better. In fact, the IRC client on the main G15 page is Java Embedded. But it was originally for animation, but they added a whole bunch of other features to it. And it was how you did multimedia for web pages for, 1997 through, 5 years ago? 6 years ago when HTML5 really took off and replaced most of the features. And the thing is, there's a lot of old classic stuff that nobody's going to go back and update. So now there is a standalone Flash Player you can download if you've like saved Swift files and things like that. So if you just need to run something, but there were a lot of business line applications that used Flash. In fact, I was working on last year some file transfer software that one of the upload options that you could set up was a Flash uploader, because that would work, especially across different versions of Internet Explorer, different versions of Chrome, different versions of Mozilla. You know, hitting it in the Flash plugin, it was a consistent means of making things work on the back end, especially if the back end was running something like Cold Fusion. Need to overhaul badly. Oh. It wasn't so much that they needed to overhaul it badly, it's that they had just kept adding more and more shit to it. It was a case of feature creep. You know, where they added the ability to play video, then they added network calls, then they added all the, you know, server calls and other things. So, Rust-based WebAssembly becomes the new standard? Maybe. I don't know. That's certainly one. I know Google had a few of their own they were promoting. HTML5 seems to be the standard these days, so we'll see. We'll see what technology ends up winning. I mean, that's always a fight. But it does mean there's probably a lot of legacy stuff, especially like government websites and stuff that they only update once every 10 years.
How about we watch Homestar Runner?
I have to hope somebody did a video capture and uploaded it to YouTube first. Go find the old Joe cartoon shit.
People stuff is truly dead now. But one thing in the story that does annoy me is the whole, we're going to kill the program on your computer because we've decided you don't need it anymore.
Well,
you can stop supporting it without having it deleted from my computer, can't you?
So, well, that's the thing, is they're pulling it from Edge and Internet Explorer. So they're disabling it through a Windows update, but it's for Edge and Internet Explorer. Chrome, the open source Chromiums, Firefox, you could probably still go grab a version of the plugin, install it, and have a page work. I doubt they're actively blocking it. They're just uninstalling it on the back end and the stuff that comes in through Windows updates. So But now Google's removing it from Chrome because they had their Pepper Flash plugin for the longest time, especially after a good chunk of Adobe Flash got open sourced. Well, not so much that it got open sourced. It's API calls and it's formatting got open sourced. The code itself didn't. So people were able to write their own implementations of Flash. And, you know, this is where you saw some people doing open source projects to make Flash games and things like that, you know, a couple of years ago. Most of that stuff is, to my knowledge, has pretty much died off these days. But, there was third-party stuff that would work with Flash. But, that was one thing, is it was consistent across, you know, whatever version of Internet Explorer, Firefox or Chrome or Opera or whatever somebody was running. And, you know, a lot of early Android devices supported Flash. That was actually one of the big arguments for going Android over iPhone, was, you know, Flash videos and Flash stuff in the browser. Of course, it would run your battery down super quick, but you could do it. So. But, yeah, I mean, you know, kind of an end of an era. Although,
yeah,
there was some rumors going around the last couple of years that Flash Player had been turned into spyware at the end there, and it was collecting as much metrics as anything else. Or user data, whatever you call it. Telemetry. That's the term, telemetry. Which, since it was installed every fucking where, I could believe it. So, I don't know. But, yeah, that does mean that, you know, these days, if you want to watch a Flash plugin, you might need to keep a virtual machine around or something. An old laptop running XP.
Yeah.
Actually, that might be worth keeping around anyways.
I got an XP machine sitting out in the shed.
Well, I mean, I kept an old laptop set up with XP for the longest time to play classic Diablo and StarCraft because it wouldn't run right on a modern machine.
Oh, SimCity 2000.
So. No, Rats, I doubt Mac is going to support Flash for a while. They've probably already removed it. So, anyways, oh, this next one's pretty cool. So, this is from Ars Technica. In a first, researchers have extracted the secret key used to encrypt Intel CPU code. This is microcode. So, researchers have extracted the secret key that encrypts updates to an assortment of Intel CPUs, a feat that could have wide-ranging consequences for the way chips are used and possibly the way they're secured. The key makes it possible to decrypt the microcode updates Intel provides to fix security vulnerabilities and other types of bugs. Having a decrypted copy of an update may allow hackers to reverse engineer it and learn precisely how to exploit the hole it's patching. The key may also allow parties other than Intel, say a malicious hacker or hobbyist, I love how they're going immediately to the bad with this, to update the chips with their own microcode, although that customized version wouldn't survive a reboot. At the moment, it's quite difficult to assess the security impact, independent researcher Maxim Gorici said in a direct message. But in any case, it's the first time in history of Intel processors that you can execute your microcode inside and analyze the updates, Gorici and two other researchers, Dmitry Solovyov and Mark Imlevov, both with the security firm Positive Technologies, work jointly on the project. The key can be extracted for any chip, be it Celeron, Pentium, or Atom, and it's based on Intel's Goldmont architecture. The genesis for the discovery came 3 years ago when Gorici and Imlevov found a critical vulnerability indexed as Intel SA00086 that allowed them to execute code of their choice inside the independent core of the chips that includes a subsystem known as the Intel Management Engine. Intel fixed the bug and released a patch, but because the chips can always be rolled back to an earlier firmware version and then exploited, there's no way to effectively eliminate the vulnerability. 5 months ago, the trio was able to use the vulnerability to access Red Unlock, a service mode embedded into Intel chips. Company engineers use this mode to debug microcode before chips are publicly released. In a nod to the Matrix movie, the researchers named their tool for accessing this previously undocumented debugger, Chip Red Pill, because it allowed researchers to experience a chip's inner workings that are usually off limits. The technique works along a USB cable or special Intel adapter that pipes data into a vulnerable CPU. Accessing a Goldmont-based CPU in Red Unlock mode allows the researchers to extract a special ROM area known as the MS-ROM, or short for Microcode Sequencer ROM. From there, they embark on a painstaking process of reverse engineering the microcode. After months of analysis, it revealed the update process and the RC4 key it uses. This analysis didn't reveal the signing key Intel uses to cryptographically prove the authenticity of an update. Intel officials wrote the issue described does not represent security exposure to customers, and we do not rely on obfuscation of this information. In addition to the mitigation, OEMs following Intel manufacturers' guidance have mitigated the OEM special unlock capabilities required for this research. So it keeps going. But pretty much what this means is that researchers are getting access to the parts of the chip to run their own microcode. Now, right now, they're comparing Intel's microcode and updates. That's step one. But what this means is they're eventually going to be able to put their own microcode on these chips. Now, to make it permanent, you got to go, you know, do a full-on firmware update, which is actually usually handled on BIOS side of the house. But so you have to update the BIOS on the main board. But or, you know, it would be a one-time thing. You install it, and then you have to redo it every time you reboot to update the firmware. But if you can get to where you're running your own microcode in these chips, so, you know, that's true direct hardware access to the chip. And that's something I was starting to explain a little bit with the Intel versus ARM thing a few weeks ago, was that ARM doesn't really do microcode. I mean, they do, but they don't do it like Intel does. ARM goes, you know, that's, you know, ARM goes for a reduced instruction set. They go for a simpler architecture and let the software, you know, up being ran in user space handle complexity. Intel, on the other hand, with the Intel architecture, or the x86 and the x64 architectures, they use microcode. And what that means is you have firmware that defines machine instructions that run on top of the chip. So even though you might be sending machine instructions, you know, like at an operating system level or things like that, you know, you're not really talking to the direct, you know, registers and instruction sets on the chip. You're talking to the microcode. That's how Intel does all these instruction sets. It's not quite FPGA, but it's, I want to say related. I'm probably oversimplifying that to myself too much, truth be told. But, you know, this is why you can have a machine language instruction on an Intel chip that could take 10 to 15 cycles to return, whereas on an ARM chip, they're almost always returning on the same cycle. And that's one of the reasons ARM chips are much more efficient when it comes to power usage, is because they're simpler. They're not doing this level of abstraction that Intel's doing. They're doing it because back in the days, they would always have developers asking them for hardware instructions that did very specific things, so it made sense to build an engine around it. So being able to have researchers get in there and tinker with the microcode, well, my hope would be that we'll eventually see open source microcode for these chips. Maybe that's more efficient. Maybe that's faster. Maybe that gives you different capabilities on the chip. Like, you know, you might load up a version of Linux that has, you know, loads its own microcode into the chips, and now it's much more efficient, you know, power usage or faster or whatever. You know, stuff Intel would never do, because if you want a better performance, they don't want to give you a microcode update. They want you to go buy a new chip.
And then you can have microcode dedicated to each operating system.
Well, potentially. Why not? I mean, you're just loading it at runtime. So, I mean, this stuff like that already happens, right? You know, there is firmware that gets loaded in for your chip. This is one of the reasons when Ryzen first came out, it was super unstable, is because you had to install a bunch of extra drivers, and software had to get patched up to account for the fact that Ryzen was different than Intel. You know what I mean? Now, these days, those problems are all fixed, but you know, the first couple revs of Ryzen chips and boards were super buggy. And it was because, you know, everybody had been writing against the Intel spec for so long. But, so yeah, I'm curious to see what comes of this, because I'd love to see it get to where, you know, you have open source microcode getting developed for these chips. Is that going to happen? I don't know. I'd like to see it. I know Intel wouldn't be too happy about it. They don't want you tinkering with the microcode. They want you to go buy a new chip.
Faster chip.
Yeah. So.
Although if that's out, is there anything they can really do to stop it?
Well, not for that particular architecture set, but stop making chips in that architecture and rotate the key and move on to a new one. And it's not exactly easy in the article. it's a process to get that key. So, but that's early days, first steps kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
So, I think it's cool. I'd like to see where that goes. In the same vein of hoping we get open source alternatives to the software that comes on these things, this one's from Android Central. Assuming you guys didn't have anything else you wanted to talk about on CPUs.
No,
you're good.
Okay. Quest 2 has allegedly been jailbroken, bypassing the Facebook login requirement, but they have not released it publicly. Ever since Facebook originally announced that a Facebook account will be required on Oculus headsets, folks have been asking the community for an alternative way to use their Oculus Quest 2. Following up on a claim from someone on Reddit a week ago, independent research firm XRSI, a not-for-profit organization, says it has confirmed the viability of root access on the Oculus Quest 2. While root access is generally thought of a way to access flash ROMs or modify the operating system in an Android smartphone world, root access on a Quest 2 means folks would be able to bypass the requirement to log into a Facebook account before being able to use their Oculus Quest 2. For now, this root method is not available to the public and has not been publicly shown off beyond a handful of screenshots that appear to show the Quest 2 working without being logged into a Facebook account. Rooting a Quest 2 is almost certainly a violation of the Facebook Terms of Service. Android Central has contacted Facebook about the matter, and they will update it if they get a response. Aside from simply wanting to use the Quest 2 without logging into Facebook first, some users have been unable to use their Quest 2 at all due to their Facebook account being banned. These bans have stemmed from several issues, including legitimate violations of Facebook's community standards, as well as erroneous bans from Facebook's algorithms that attempt to identify fake accounts. XRSI also states the importance of total device ownership, or the right to repair, in the era of climate change and excessive e-waste. Okay. The logic dictates that you fully own any device you purchase, including the right to modify it, well, I agree with that, or otherwise use it as you would like. While this wouldn't apply to any Facebook services, it would mean that users could continue to use the Quest 2 via third-party app stores like SideQuest without fear of having their device bricked or rendered otherwise unstable. And I wouldn't put it past Facebook to just flat-out brick devices if they see people rooting them. I wouldn't put it past them in the least.
Yeah, they're already kicking off people for not violating terms of service.
Well, that's the thing, right? If they said a Facebook account's required, and if your Facebook account is banned because they've decided you said something naughty and violated a community terms of service, you can't use your Quest. These things are not cheap. I'm not buying a Quest 2. I've got a Quest 1. It's a great headset. I'm not buying a Quest 2. I'll use the Quest 1 until it up and croaks on me, and then I'll probably go for the HTC or whatever the Steam option is or whatever. But I'm
something that doesn't require a third-party account.
Well, I mean, all of your game stores require a third-party account, but at least the Steam one is Steam and not a fucking Facebook doesn't exactly have a great reputation at the moment for being even-handed, especially if you happen to have politics that differ.
Yeah, like I said, Facebook bans people for not violating terms of service. They've banned people and they can't point to a term of service that they've violated. So it's arbitrary. I don't want them to be able to say, not only can you not be on Facebook, but that $300 video game you just bought, that's broken too because you needed Facebook.
Yeah.
Like, no, fuck you.
So I hope they don't start bricking devices that have been rooted, but they haven't published the root yet. And I wonder if the guy with the root is hoping Facebook pays him money to not publish it. I mean, I couldn't blame him.
No, that just means somebody else has to come up with the route and then also blackmail Facebook.
Well, it means it exists, right? And the thing's running Android under the hood, so there's got to be a way. And obviously there is. This guy found it. But, I mean, somebody else can find it now that they know it exists. But, yeah, since the fact that this guy hasn't published the route, one, it might be, like, really tricky and he doesn't want people breaking the shit and blaming him for it, so I don't blame that. But two, I'm wondering if he's in talks with Facebook right now about releasing it.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, it's like, if you give me $250,000, I won't release this.
That's a low ball number.
Yeah.
Think you get a few mil out of it?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about a few mil, but
I'd be going for 1.5 at least.
Somewhere in there.
Then we get the 500 grand negotiation, you know what I mean?
Well, because you think about it. Again, what is Facebook's primary business? It's not selling headsets. It's data. And if I have a way of taking your expensive headset and publishing how to use it without logging into the system and sharing all the usage data with you guys, that means that it no longer supports your core business model. And, you know, now maybe Facebook doesn't care about that with the Oculus headsets, but if that was the case, why would they kill the separate Oculus accounts and require everyone to go to a Facebook account?
Because it makes them more money, but the question is, will it make them enough? Is the Oculus user base large enough to generate enough added revenue on from whatever sidelines they're doing to make paying out a large sum of money cost effective?
I would say yes. I mean,
well, it's quite possible. I don't know how much money they make per person with data collection.
Well, think how many people see VR chat videos and try one out in a store and immediately have to have one. I mean, hell, last time I went up there and hung out with you and Static, and I brought mine, and you guys both played with it. Static was immediately trying to buy one. Hell, you played with it.
Yeah, it was fun. I'm not buying one.
So
I don't know that Static bought one, but I know I'm not buying one.
So, but yeah, the way they require it be linked to a Facebook account now is just kind of...
That's a note from me.
I'm still operating on my Oculus account, but also I haven't logged into the thing in a couple of months, so I don't know if, you know, the next time I turn it on, it's going to be like, you have to link it to your Facebook account. Fuck you. You know?
So, oh, no. When you log in, they'll just be like, don't worry, we've already taken care of that for you.
Yeah, probably. Well, I was in my Facebook account, even though it's been... My Facebook account had been idle for years. I was in it because I was dealing with a 3D printer issue and trying to find a way to get a hold of the company that I was having the issue with. Turns out it wasn't Facebook. It was another means, but that's a different issue. So, but yeah, I actually was back in it. So they could correlate IPs and say, is this you? So... the article I saw on requiring Facebook accounts was existing headsets could use the Oculus one, but all new ones would require a Facebook account. So, and I think that's one of the big niggles with the Quest 2, is apparently it's a better headset, but they've got it crippled in software right now. And that you have to be in Facebook, and apparently it's very integrated from what people were saying. Which is too bad, but I still got that Windows VR headset, which was good. You know, that old HP one. It worked. The Oculus is better, but it can do the whole USB link to a PC thing. So I figure I'll just do that with it until whatever. But and actually, I should look for that and see if there's any good routes out there for the Quest 1 just to de-link it from accounts and things like that. But it was its own account. It wasn't hooked into anything else. I don't even use my normal screen names in it. So, because I knew Facebook, you know, was taking over Oculus at the time I picked the thing up. So,
didn't want anyone to know you were playing Beat Saber.
No, well, that yeah, that's part of it. But anyways.
What's next on the agenda?
Rats is saying he logged into his and it forced him to log into Facebook to even get to a menu. On the Quest 1? Ah. Damn it. That's going to suck. Well, last story for tonight. That sucks. That means that headset is...
Retro changing terms of service.
Fantastic.
Means I need to start looking for routes for the headset. Last one up is from DW.com. Dark web cyber bunker trial breaks new ground. A Cold War bunker in a small German town housed dark net internet servers that facilitated illegal online activity. The group allegedly operating the servers are on trial, but are they responsible for the 250,000 crimes they've logged with the thing? Germany's largest ever cybercrime trial began this week amid much media fanfare at the district court of the city of Trier. The courtroom was packed. Defendants and their lawyers were wearing face masks and separated by plastic screens. On the first, so it was like a presidential debate, or vice presidential debate. On the first day, the judge took 2 hours to read out the charges.
Damn.
That's impressive when it was 2 hours just to read the fucking charges.
They have to enter each individual one into the record. Yeah.
That's
if they're saying 200,000 offenses, yeah.
Well, I think they're charging them with everything that happened on these servers, even though that wasn't them. They were just running a darknet ISP, basically. On the second, three of the eight defendants were given the opportunity to tell their life stories. The eight people, four Dutch, three German, and one Belgian, worked at the Cyberbunker data center at a disused military bunker in the pretty village of Tabrin Tarbich, north of Trier. They are now charged with aiding and abetting criminals in some 249,000 illegal online transactions involving drugs, contract killings, money laundering, images of child abuse worth millions of euros. The way that's phrased, they make it...
It's phrased wrong.
Yeah, they're saying all those crimes together add up to millions of euros, but it made it look like the images of child abuse were worth millions of euros.
I was saying, yeah. Maybe it's a translation from a non-English publisher.
Yeah, Rats, I'm going to be doing something similar because I haven't bought that much in the Oculus store, just a handful of the games and stuff. He was saying what he does is he doesn't have any of his games in Oculus except Beat Saber. And then the rest of them, he does Steam Link. That's not what it's called. Oculus Link is where you use a USB cable and then just runs all of his games in Steam. Yeah, I'm probably going to be doing something similar with mine. Yeah, I'm glad nobody bought that stupid $80 cable because it works with any damn cable these days. In September, monoprice powered USB extender. Yeah, those are good. In September 2019, a major police operation had been in the works for half a decade, raided the bunker and closed it down. Key members of the group were arrested. The alleged ringleader of the operation, 60-year-old Dutchman Jonah X, remained impassive and silent throughout the first days of questioning, listening to the testimony of the first three defendants. Dutchman Michael R., who worked as a manager at the bunker, summed up his checkered job history and gave a tearful description of his close relationship with his mother. Jacqueline B., a German who acted as a bookkeeper for the operation, spoke of her childhood in Cameroon, growing up as the daughter of a poor farmer. 21-year-old German IT expert who spent a year working in technical support described his solitary life and history of depression.
What the fuck does this have to do with committing crimes?
Don't throw the book at me. I'm really a nice person.
I don't give a shit what you were before this crime was committed. I'm not saying they committed a crime. I'm just saying, what the fuck does it have to do with it? Well, you've done something. Now we're going to judge you on that.
They shouldn't be. Well, maybe they're trying to do the whole we're not bad people things. Again, the argument should be we didn't do any of this. We ran a service. We had no idea what the clients were doing with it. I mean, if this is the case, you've got buku cases against Facebook, Google, and every ISP in your country. And phone company, for that matter.
Yeah.
Like, I'd like to see Section 230 get some tweaks, but come on.
All right, keep going.
There's been much focus in the international media on the bunker the group used for its operation. The massive construction was built during the Cold War to house a NATO command center. It sits on a hill overlooking the small town of 6,000 people, mostly known for its Riesling wine vineyards. We are tourist-oriented here. It's very picturesque, explained Patrice Christian Roger Langer, mayor of, well, you know it's good when they've got four names, mayor of Traben Tarbuk. He knows the bunker well because he worked there as a computer programmer in the 1980s and 90s. It's like a giant root system, he said. Only one story is above ground and four are underground. The only way to differentiate between each floor is through the color coding on the walls. Visitors would often come in and have no idea if they're at the ground level or 10 meters underground. At the end of the Cold War, the bunker gradually fell into disuse, and the German government eventually sold it to Jonan X in 2013. Langer said the town council had no say in the sale, and there was much speculation about his plans for the bunker. So I phoned him and asked if I could come to visit, said Langer. He said I could come any time, I just need to give him a little notice because of the guard dogs. And he was very open. I visited twice and could look behind every door I wanted to. Not that much appeared to have changed since my time working there. Jonan X promised that his new IT hub would offer at least 80 jobs to the local community, which Langley said were badly needed. He also pledged to set up an IT training center, but he remained vague about the exact nature of his operation. None of his promises materialized. The rumors continued to fly among the townspeople that X was producing drugs or buying and selling weapons in the bunker. Then in September 2019, Langer was attending a meeting in a neighboring town and received a WhatsApp notification. Police vans and helicopters were at the bunker. He raced back to Traben Tarbuk to find the bunker had been raided. Only then did Langer and the other residents of the town hear what may have been going on at the dark web empire that X had allegedly been running. So, okay. Want to bet the whole reason they looked into this thing at all is because the dude was promising jobs and they didn't happen fast enough?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to speculate.
Jonan X and the other defendants are accused of having run a bulletproof hosting service for websites, which they offered clients the opportunity to run secret operations online. There is no consistent meaning for the dark web, explained Stephen Murdoch, expert in security engineering at University College in London. No, dude, the dark web has a definition. For reference, when you say dark web, all that really means is a part of the internet that's obfuscated in some way. Now, if you mean deep web, that's shit that's not indexed by search engines. But dark web just means it's hidden in some way. Now, whether that's by not being indexed or running in an unusual way or running through something like a Tor or a Freenet. There's like five or six others, but those are the ones that come to mind. Most commonly, it's used as a reference for sinister stuff on the internet because it sounds a bit sinister. And bulletproof hosting is entirely unrelated to the dark web, but sometimes it might involve the same people. Eh. Yeah, I mean, it all kind of lives in the same space. Jonan X expressly offered bulletproof hosting for Cyberbunker customers from the beginning, which allowed clients to have access to the darknet, where some of the internet's most nefarious operations took place. He initially advertised the Cyberbunker would host websites with anything except, quote, child porn and anything related to terrorism, unquote. So, yeah, he was just running no questions asked hosting. That's all it really was. You know, you guys are going to run Tor shit on your servers? We don't care. We don't care.
I rent you a warehouse. I'm not going to fucking ask you what you're putting in it.
Yeah.
I'm only interested in collecting that rent every month. You know, if you're doing some shady shit, that's on you, man. You know, like, hey, you got to pay to park here. If that's not your car, it's not my fucking question to ask. You know what I mean? Just pay the parking fee.
Yeah. Bulletproof Hosting is for services that are normal internet servers or services, but are either illegal or illicit, said Murdoch. You're making assumptions there. Could also be sites that maybe they're not illegal, but they're just distasteful, and so they've been kicked off of every other hosting platform.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not just it's you know, they say bulletproof because, oh, it's illegal. It's not illegal. It's just no questions asked. It's kind of assumed if you're going for that kind of hosting, there's a reason for it, but it's not necessarily illegal. The fact that it usually is, notwithstanding. Well, by definition, it's not, even though in practice it usually is. How about that? Is that a fair way to put it?
That might be a fair way to put it, but he did say he was keeping track of what's hosted there when he said he wouldn't allow child pornography or terrorism.
Well, that's a fair point, too. He did say that.
So, saying that, it's you're breaking down the argument of, I'm renting this house anyone, and at that point it's just, it's a house for rent, I'm getting rent, but I don't know what you're doing in it, to I'm renting this house, but I do have caveats, and now you're opening yourself up to, well, you're saying you will allow, you're not going to allow child pornography or terrorism, but kidnapping for just beating someone to death for shits and giggles is permitted in your house.
9 times out of 10, bulletproof hosting is used for malware, spam campaigns, shady advertising, and gambling.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what it's, but that's saying, what's run on it.
If he wants to be the whole I'm just renting out space, don't hold me accountable, then he just shouldn't say I'm limiting anything, because at that point you're opening yourself up to, well, you're already monitoring what they're doing. Why are you allowing this drug runner to run out of your house?
Well, it might be more that it might be more instead of monitoring what he was doing, he was just saying when he advertised it, it's like, yeah, no, it's bulletproof hosting. I just don't want any of that shit. He's not actually looking. He's just saying he doesn't want it. Again, splitting hairs. I don't know. Let's keep reading. Bulletproof hosting is for services that are normal internet services, but are either illegal or illicit, said Murdoch. But it's important to remember that most bad stuff on the internet happens on the normal internet. He cited one study by the British Internet Watch Foundation into child abuse images and found that less than 1% of those images were accessed through so-called onion servicers that help anonymize the user. Okay, that's true. And the reason for that is going through Tor is a pain in the ass. So usually they just run off the book servers that either have goofy domain names or shit's buried a few layers deep in the URL, or it's just on weird ports. I've seen that one more often than not. I used to find IRC servers running on weird ports all the damn time, especially up in the high-numbered stuff. So
they're just hiding in, look how big the internet is. The odds are they're not going to find us.
Yeah, we're hiding in a haystack that we've hidden in a much larger haystack. So, you know, and there's only two, you know, and there are two ways to find a needle in a haystack. Do you know what they are?
I'm going with a magnet, or you sit on the needle.
Well, you burn the haystack down, dude.
There it is.
It's the easiest way.
A magnet, or you burn the haystack. And I'm hoping they don't go for burning the haystack. Investigators are still examining the contents of hundreds of physical and virtual servers that the bunker housed, and say they have yet to find any content not related to illegal activity. But Murdoch said it's just about it's still just about conceivable that a service host provider might not know about the nature of the customer's online activity, especially if they consciously turned a blind eye. Which, if you're advertising bulletproof hosting, that's what that means. It means I'm not watching what you're doing. The principle that organizations are not responsible for their customers is a good one and quite widely held, said Murdoch. As soon as you are a large organization, there will be terrible people using your services. So the question is, what proportion of your customers are terrible people? The proportion is the key part because major internet hosting services like Amazon may well facilitate millions of cases of illegal online activity, but given their mammoth size, this only makes up a tiny portion of their service, Murdoch pointed out. And that's a fair point. The defense attorneys this week argued that the group around Joan and X were unaware of what content and transactions were being carried out on the websites hosted on the Bunker servers. With the trial set to last over a year, and the public prosecutor says the trial will cover new legal ground, that's always good. Even if prosecutors can prove that Joan and X and his team knew about the activity, the key question of the trial is whether an internet service provider has any right to act on this knowledge. Germany is a country where data privacy is fiercely protected. Electronic payment methods are still unusual in large swaths of the country, partly because of fears about data mining. Mayor Langer is among those who see the case as an opportunity to re-examine some of these regulations. Quote, I work with children, and I have to have my internet search history and personal background checked by the police every year, he said. Really?
That is a step above bonding.
Yeah. Wow.
Like, they want to make sure there aren't pedophile teachers.
I mean, you know, A for effort, not certain about the whole personal rights thing and right to privacy, but A for effort. but this man can run an operation facilitating the sale of images of child abuse, and he can claim lack of knowledge because of data security. Something has to change. The trial is set to last until December 2021 at the earliest as the prosecutors go through the thousands of charges leveled at the defendants. The available evidence indicates that a guilty verdict is far from certain, but Murdoch said the law enforcement often keeps key pieces of evidence up their sleeves in cases like this. Oh, so they're doing trial by ambush? You can't do that! You can't do trial by ambush. That's illegal.
You can't do that in this country.
Oh.
You can't do that in this country. You gotta remember, this is Germany. They don't have all the same rights.
But even in Germany, they gotta have fair trials.
In France, you're guilty until proven innocent.
Really?
You've gotta think. You're coming at this from an American point of view where we have a shit ton of freedoms most of the world does not have. We are the only country that has any semblance of freedom of speech.
We have
remember
guilt.
This.
We have guilt through association, man. You don't even need to do the crime. You just got to know the person.
We have something similar here, but it's not often used.
That's racketeering. RICO stature.
I guess trial by ambush is an American term because I'm not finding anything on that with a quick search. So I don't know. I guess they're allowed to do that. We'll probably never know exactly what went on in the bunker, he said. Langer is will keenly await the verdict. This is really history in the making. So they said they're holding bits back. I wonder if that means they're just not presenting it to the press, or if they're not presenting it to the defense.
Defense attorney.
Yeah,
that'd be a Brady violation here. But I don't know if they have a similar statute there.
I don't think they do.
Let's see. What'd you call that? A Brady violation?
Yeah, a Brady violation.
Okay. Yeah, because those come from the 5th and 14th Amendments. Yeah, so that's your fear of trial. Does Germany have an equivalent?
I'd say no. Guessing. I know New Zealand's changing all their laws for that sort of stuff.
No, I'm not finding any kind of equivalent. So yeah, in Germany, they don't have to tell you what they have on you till you're in court. They can absolutely trial by ambush. At least from what I'm finding with a quick search. I haven't researched it, but I guess you'd need a German lawyer to answer that question, wouldn't you?
Yep.
But yeah, everything I'm finding on this is all referencing United States law. So that might be a lot more common outside of the States than I'd like to think.
we give a lot of protections to our accused. In many countries, if it makes it to trial, you're assumed guilty because there was already an investigation. The cops are already saying you did it, so it's up to you to prove that you didn't.
Well, that's a little terrifying.
The innocent until proven guilty is an English common law thing. So unless your country founded by Britain or possibly conquered and ruled by them for several hundred years, you don't have the innocent until proven guilty.
Well, that's scary.
They're like Mexico, Peru.
Yeah.
Yeah.
France.
Countries to stay out of, as I like to call them.
All of the Middle East, much of Africa.
So what I'm hearing is in countries like that, the idea of exonerating yourself in court is a rare thing.
More difficult.
So,
but upside, many of those countries are open to bribes. So you just pay your way out of jail.
All right, moving on.
Oh.
What? Did you have something?
I think the case should come down to how he was marketing it. Because I do believe willful blindness is a thing. And if he walks into, let's say, a room full of murderers and starts renting out no questions asked office space.
With free daily bleachings.
You might know what you're getting into. But if he's just throwing up, we're doing internet access and we're not monitoring, that's just an open portal that I wouldn't mind buying.
Well, if he was actually using the term bulletproof hosting when he was marketing it, I wouldn't expect the average person to know what that means, but I would expect somebody who works in the field to know what that means. So if he was advertising it as bulletproof hosting, that's kind of understood what that is for. You know what I mean? And part of the reason they're probably going after the people running the company is because if it's true bulletproof posting, they probably don't know who their clients are. They were probably getting paid in cryptocurrency or through, you know, third-party payment systems where they don't have real names. They might have an email address for servicing, but, you know, that's usually how one of the things with bulletproof hosting is that you usually don't know who your clients are, and that's usually on purpose. So it you're right. It depends on how he was advertising it. If he used that phrase, though, that's
and he's moving into willful blindness rather than actual blindness.
Yeah. So now you could argue that was part of the, that was part of the marketing or part of, you know, his distinctive factor in business, especially if there's no law requiring him to know who each one of his customers are for hosting. Again, I don't know the German laws, but, I know that EU was looking at doing a know your customer type laws similar to the financial industry for ISPs. So I don't know what the current state of you know, requiring you to know who your customers are and keep those kind of records are if you're an ISP in Germany today. But if there's not, you could say, well, that was my competitive advantage. You know, sort of like the whole Hooters hiring, you know, only chicks for waiters thing. Although I think they lost that case, didn't they?
Nope. Having boobs is a bona fide occupational qualification for being a waitress at Hooters.
Okay. I was trying to remember. So I think you could make a similar argument for that, for the whole privacy side of the house. Because I know a few VPNs have claimed they want to make that kind of argument. But I don't know that it's come up yet. So I don't know. I don't know. But, yeah, if you're advertising bulletproof hosting, that means you're not checking names. You're usually offering forms of payment that are, if not anonymous, easy to use with fake identities. You know, prepaid credit cards, that kind of shit. You're, you know, taking gift cards and cryptocurrency and things where you don't need a real name associated with it. And any name you have is probably made up. Yeah.
I'm talking about how I live.
Some people use bulletproof hosting. RU uses the bulletproof lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, back to this. All I have for Digital Dojo tonight is an alternative operating system for the Raspberry Pi, which I thought was pretty cool, though. It's called Indigo Jam Basic. And what this thing does, well, you when you install this OS on your SD card and boot it on the Raspberry Pi, it sort of resembles running Sinclair, an old, like, 1980s Sinclair, for doing the whole basic programming on the screen kind of thing. So if you want that 80s computer, you know, experience. this is
Oregon
how to do it.
Oregon Trail, yay!
This is, well, yeah, I mean, Oregon Trail was on those machines. But yeah,
that didn't program, I played games.
Yeah, this is more if you're wanting to play with basic programming, and it's meant as a teaching thing. But you can still hit the I/O pins, I2C and all that stuff, and the GPIO pins in BASIC. So if you want, you know, you want to teach somebody programming using BASIC but still being able to do some hardware interaction, you know, blink an LED or, you know, trigger a relay, that kind of thing, absolutely a way to do it. I mean, the programming concepts in BASIC are still good. I mean, you're not going to get a job in BASIC, but, you know, if you're doing Timmy's first computer, it might be a way to go. And, you know, they're not going to get on the internet and find bulletproof hosting and get you in real trouble. But, I don't know. Are you, did you do your time on those kind of computers?
Nah, man. That was pretty much at the start, so I think I had a little intro to it, but I was pretty much out there trying best to kill myself, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Living fast and fucking around and making mistakes. But I was lucky that I had a few friends who were into it, and he walked me through a few things. So a Pentium 3 was the first one I had, but I didn't take anything really seriously with it. But just a little fuck around thing, you know what I mean?
I gotcha.
It wasn't until I broke my back and got into that XP machine, I really started going, oh, okay, I can get into this. You know, this is my thing. But, and I was super lucky, ran into you guys, helped me learn quicker and quicker every time.
Well, I mean, you know, of course, I think back to the glory days on the Commodore 64. I didn't really have one. This is a little bit more basic than that, because this is, you know, this is scaled down. But
I didn't have it, but because my old man, you know, computers were a phase. You know, they won't be around for, you know, it's just a flash in the pan.
Well, but you think about what those early machines looked like. I can understand why he thought that.
Well, considering what he did for a living, man. Like, we work with his hands. You know, there wasn't even mobile phones at this point. You know, he's just looking at it going, what's the fucking point? You know, I don't want to type out a novel or anything. But other friends had Amstrads and Commodores and stuff like that. So, yeah, I get to play with them.
Yeah. And even then, if you weren't disk swapping with a group or something like that, it'd be kind of like, okay, so you could make it beep and move screen pictures around the screen. So what? I mean, I could see a lot of people not getting the point until you started seeing interconnectivity.
Dude, we're talking about tape decks where you put the tape in, you press play, it runs, and you go outside for an hour and play. And then you come back in, you flip tape over if it hasn't crashed, and then go back out and play for another hour. Then you get to play some side scrolling, you know, Pitfall or something like that, you know, a bit of Centipede. And then it was like, fuck this shit. Let's go back outside and ride bikes. You know what I mean? That was early intro stuff.
Oh, I used to leave the computer on because I typed in a program.
Yeah.
And I didn't have my own
program
discs.
Books.
I didn't have my own discs yet. Right. Because my dad said, I didn't have anything worth saving. I didn't need a disc. So he didn't want to give me a disc. Turns out discs were fucking expensive back in the day, and I was a kid and didn't know.
They were.
So he did eventually give me one, but did you guys lose audio? Rat said the audio just cut.
No, I'll check the site.
No, he said it just came back. But yeah, so the reason he gave me a disc was because I would leave the computer on with whatever random bullshit I had typed into it on, because I had a game working or I had it making gun sound effects, which was, I made the thing sound like a machine gun. That was awesome. So he eventually let me use a disc because, you know, it was getting silly fighting with him because he would try to do his stuff and I'd have a game saved in there and shit like that. So anyways, that's all I've got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday. Galaxy 15 radio site, the subreddit in the IRC tonight, even though we read it out at the top of the show. Myself, Sardonyx, Cyber Dystopia, which is the bot, Cyber Lard, Psychros, DP View, Herrats, Madman, and the coffee maker who never says anything but just sits there looking creepy. Madman, closing thoughts.
How much use did you get out of the AOL floppies before they moved to AOL CDs?
A little bit of scotch tape to get you your right protect notch back. Peel that fucking AOL label off and stick a sticker on it. And dude, you had a perfectly good disc. Hell, they even used to, a lot of them still had the right protection knocked in them. So you could just format them and use them as you wanted. I think half my early floppies were all AOL discs.
And they accuse us of e-waste. Fuck you, Greta, you climate goblin cunt.
Was that yours, are you? Or do you
that's
have...
my final statement.
Okay. that's all we've got for tonight. I'm going to hit buttons now.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Time to go nose down and call it a night. Nah, I'm a white guy.
Shut up, Wesley.